Hi, and thank you so much for joining us today on the Microsoft and SBA Tech Tips Hour. Well, first we want to say, thank you for joining us today. And we have an exciting broadcast that's going to be talking about the return on investment when calculating your move to the cloud. We would like to say thank you very much to our sponsors, the SBA, Small Business Administration team out of Santa Ana, for being such forward thinkers and providing this forum to help their members, as well as any type of small to medium-sized business, learn about the latest and greatest technology that's out there. So we're super excited. We want to say thank you to them. And our broadcast is really aimed at helping small to medium-sized business owners understand technology from a high level, and then take that understanding, in a safe environment, and apply that to help them, move forward and beat out the competition that they're working against, empower them to be great. So my name is Sherman Krantzer, and I'm the Senior Partner Channel Development Manager for Microsoft, and I'm just absolutely excited to be here. I have my contact information that's up here, and you can always reach out to me if you have any questions or you want to be, come to and sit in the audience for us. My phone number is 680-6671, but you can always reach me on my email. I'm a LinkedIn open networker, and super excited to accept invitations and talk, or you can follow me on Twitter. Thank you. So, moving next, we are very, very lucky before I talk about Brian, but the agenda, let's get into the agenda real quick. So it's a discussion around return on investment. And that's what's really important here is we're gonna really, break it down. We're gonna kind of do an overview of return on investment when moving from the cloud or the on-premise type of environment to the cloud. We're gonna have some examples of that. We'll talk about the objectives. What is the process, and then we'll summarize it all up. So it's going to be a great discussion today. It's going to be back and forth. We're kind of in the same format as it's always been. We are absolutely lucky today to have a visionary in his industry, in his part of the industry. Brian has been in enterprise resource planning for ERP, that we call it, for over 27 years. He has written articles, he's been quoted, he's absolute expert in the industry when it comes down to this, and we're just excited to be here. Thank you, Brian, for coming. Brian, can you kind of give us a little bit, more of your background, and then we'll get started.
Terrific, Sherman. Thank you. Before we start, I wanted to mention something that Fred Smith, who's the founder, chairman, CEO, and president of FedEx, once was quoted saying, "Every time we make an investment decision at FedEx, we ask ourselves, what is the return on this investment?" My name is Brian Enuma with Strategic Systems Group. Our core competence is in the implementation and support of enterprise resource planning applications, including Microsoft Dynamics and SysPro. Someone once asked recently about our strengths as an organization. First one I'll mention briefly is that we've been in the business quite a long time, have experience with manufacturing organizations of various sorts. Second thing I mentioned was that our skills at problem solving are very good. And it doesn't really matter too much if it's a complex problem or not. And the third is that we often have come to learn that we don't know what we don't know. And from that standpoint, we're willing to take a step back and do some research for the client. Thank you to Sherman, the Microsoft organization, and the SBA. Happy to be here.
All right. So, moving into, the actual meat of the program, I think what we're going to start looking at first is really the concept around the things that you really have to understand first, and that's decision-making concepts. Brian, can you kind of walk us through that a little bit and then let us know, how you approach these types of engagements and how you help coach, small to medium-sized business owners on, figuring out the right types of information?
Sure, thank you. The return on investment concept, it supports decision-making. And a lot of times I kind of refer to it as data-driven decision-making. For the ROI calculations, that they're simple to calculate, and they're useful for comparing alternatives. oftentimes we found that in situations where we have a choice of amongst alternatives, we make a better decision than just making a yes-no decision on one. A little bit of caution, it's subject to error. Some of the estimates require some analysis to make sure you have the right data. And above all, it's a process. Being a process is not necessarily bad, because if you can define the process, chances are it'll be repeatable for future instances.
That's really interesting there. So simple to calculate, useful to compare, subject to error, and it's a process. So that's pretty much what you came in.
Yes.
All right, so why don't you move into examples?
Terrific. So the examples that we chose for today, cloud solution evaluation, which we'll talk about in more detail later on in our presentation. Also, manufacturers sometimes have a make versus buy decision. And then in enterprise resource planning, on occasion, there's a need to do a replacement of some sort. And we help clients in those terms from a standpoint of being able to evaluate software solutions amongst alternatives.
So with the cloud solution evaluation, can you elaborate a little bit more on that piece? What are we talking about? Is it, some people aren't even ready to talk about the cloud. They don't even know what the cloud is. So can you maybe give us a little more, thoughts on that?
Sure. The cloud solution evaluation is one that I think applies quite well to small and medium-sized businesses.
Oh, okay.
And basically, it is a situation where there's a choice oftentimes between an on-premise deployment and deployment in the cloud. And for small organizations, there's some cost trade-offs. We'll talk a little bit later on about CapEx and OpEx. But in situations like that, small businesses need that cash flow, and maybe the cloud solution is better for them.
Okay, and then the make versus buy piece of it, that's literally making it or buying it and then reselling it, yeah?
That's correct.
Okay, just making sure, some of us, this isn't, really something that I've got a lot of experience into it, but that's really good. And then the enterprise resource planning software evaluation, and that's not necessarily nuts and bolts, but that's more about all the internal software that you're probably running for all of your different, programs that you have in your office. Or is that, would you say that's correct?
That's correct. The enterprise resource planning application is sort of all-encompassing.
Okay.
So oftentimes, the software will be in manufacturing organizations to support the accounting aspects, sales order processing, purchase orders, accounts receivable, accounts payable. But then on the complex side, also inventory control, logistics, manufacturing.
Okay, great. All right. So why don't we move into the next one just real quickly. Really, I know that you kind of gave a little explanation of it, but I think a lot of customers out there have, small to medium-sized businesses out there have, asked this question, or they've heard this thing called ERP. What is ERP? And I remember, I know here at Microsoft, we have a lot of acronyms. I mean, we could go almost full paragraphs, pages of acronyms. And that's why I thought it was really important that we talk about it. You and I could talk back in the green room. Help me out and understand, ERP.
Sure. ERP, as you mentioned, short for Enterprise Resource Planning. It's an all-encompassing type of application that pervades the entire manufacturing organization. Also can apply to logistics organizations as well. In small and medium-sized business, it's a little bit different. And maybe it's more about having something that supports accounting first, and then perhaps something that might support inventory control. There are some clear benefits for enterprise resource planning, and there are certain situations where having that software in place does some magic for manufacturing organizations, especially in the area of supply chain management. Part of the difficulties that we've seen in some of the logistics companies that we've been exposed to is not having enough inventory, or maybe worse, having too much inventory. There is something that is coming up in November, which is a release of Dynamics, Microsoft Dynamics 365, which we're pretty excited about. We're thinking that it's going to be a big benefit to the small and medium-sized business. Part of the reason for that benefit, I think, is the integration. So Microsoft Dynamics 365 was intended to have integration with Outlook and CRM and Power BI.
Okay, so now, small to large, right? I mean, I think a lot of folks have probably thought ERP. That must be for, you know, companies like Oracle is providing ERP, and you must be a really big company to really utilize this. And with the advantage or the addition of Dynamics 365, how is that really relating to small to medium-sized business, Brian?
That's a good question, Sherman. Often we bump into companies that are using QuickBooks and have used QuickBooks for many years. And in general, their accounting packages, accounting in QuickBooks is pretty good. The one thing that kind of sets them apart occasionally is that need for inventory control. So that's kind of the next level up. And I think that in many instances, a small organization can't afford a large tier one or tier two application. I think Microsoft Dynamics 365 does a really good job of fitting in that slot just above QuickBooks.
Okay. And then what would the cost of an ERP solution typically be, a tier one? I mean, a ballpark number, and just to kind of frame it for the public here.
Okay, that's also a good question. Sometimes we cringe at the cost of some of those tier one implementations, yeah. And you know as well as I do. Uh-huh. So some of those things could be millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars. And the sad part about some of them is that the money gets expended and, uh-huh. and they don't have it running. In smaller organizations, say wow. we go down to maybe tier two, tier three, so some of those implementations are more in the $100,000 to say $500,000 range, so sometimes up to $1 million. And those oftentimes turn out a little bit better, partly because the process is defined and contained pretty well.
Okay. Wow, that is really expensive. So that typically would then remove SMB out of the equation if they're going to go for a full ERP platform, right? And I think that was what some of the neat things about, I think the Dynamics 365, which actually basically provides ERP for small to medium-sized business on a monthly basis. And I know that, you know, QuickBooks is very similar. I mean, that's to a degree an ERP type of platform. Utilizing, there are other, you know, competitors out there. The Dynamics 365 platform can provide many of the same things and more functionality. Would you agree with that?
The Dynamics 365 platform uh-huh. is I think, intended to be forward-looking in the sense that today it was accounting and then perhaps inventory control type uh-huh. type applications. Uh-huh. But I think that as it progresses, there's opportunity to go and add some additional functionality to support maybe light manufacturing or light assembly. So some of those things should be very beneficial to small and medium-sized business.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So there are things out there for SMB. And that's good. So ERP isn't something that's just completely out of the concept. All right. So now that we know that, now we kind of done some of the basics here. I think it's really important to understand what are the objectives, you know, when you're calculating ROI and understanding that. And, you know, Brian is a master at this type of stuff. So, Brian, why don't you go ahead and help us understand the objectives and we'll go through your points.
Thanks, Sherman. As far as objectives are concerned, kind of mentioned this notion of data-driven decision-making earlier, and the notion of comparing alternatives. As I mentioned, that making a decision amongst alternatives is often much better than making a yes-no decision on one. For small and medium-sized business, the key is time and money. So one of the objectives of an ROI calculation is to make sure that you chose the project that has the highest and best use of time and capital.
Okay, so the comparison of alternatives, why don't we just kind of elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. In our explanation, we'll kind of go through a cloud versus an on-premise scenario. Uh-huh. And the comparison of alternatives there is simplistic in some regards, but still, it is a better way to look at things than just to try and make a yes-no decision on one.
Oh, okay.
We'll go through some calculations in both scenarios and then compare the results at the end.
Okay, so basically our objective is to use the data to drive the actual decision, comparing all of the different opportunities, right? And then using the highest and best use of time and the capital, and that's really what you're trying to get at here, right?
Absolutely.
Perfect. Okay, thanks. Once again, for some of us that don't know this, we know this is a great explanation. All right, so now that we know the objectives of what we're trying to do, we have the foundation, we need to look at, how do we define the processes behind going, getting this type of, final answer. And I'll turn it back over to Brian here. He's going to talk about, the processes and how they're defined. Brian?
Great. Thanks, Sherman. From a process perspective, it's important for a couple reasons. One is that you have a roadmap to follow and don't miss any steps in between. The other thing that's good about a process is that the process is repeatable. So in situations where this comes up a number of times over the course of a few years, that process is reusable, can be used again for future decision making. The first step is to gather some accurate data. And oftentimes, we end up making some gut decisions based upon what we remember about things, but I'm often surprised about looking at the actual data and saying, hey, that's not what I remember. The next step is to go and create some estimates. And sometimes the estimation process has some error in it, and we'll touch on a little bit later. But based upon the historical data, it's possible to create some estimates kind of forward-looking into the future. Part of that trick is to go and estimate those cash flows, both in and out, that go out in the future for say some number of years. In our case, we chose 5 for our example. And then to calculate the related ROI and the metrics, and those calculations, we have a few of them to show to kind of give some different feeling for how the decision process gets made. The decision-making process also includes the implementation of no decision, and sometimes we kind of forget that not making a decision is also a decision.
We had a question that came from the audience, and it was back to ERP and defining tier 1 as opposed to tier 2 and tier 3. Can you possibly just help us understand that?
Sure. Tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3 were sort of kind of arbitrary types of demarcations in terms of how to classify ERP applications. To tier 1, only for the very largest of organizations that might have, say multiple locations and, say, transactions in multiple currencies. SAP, Oracle, and Microsoft Dynamics AX kind of fall in that tier 1 category. Tier 2, mostly smaller. And I guess just to backtrack a little, my sense is that the tier 1 software is probably only good for situations where revenue might exceed, say, $250 million in revenue. That the Tier 2 segment's kind of one step below, and there are a number of applications that kind of fit in that Tier 2 area. We have some experience with some of them. It's typically for a smaller company, maybe a single location or maybe a few locations in the U.S. Those situations might be good for a Tier 2 application. Tier 3 and Tier 4 probably is where the most of the SMB are going to be in that area where QuickBooks, say Microsoft Dynamics 365, and others, that software as a service might also play.
Okay, cool. Hey, the next question that came up actually is one of the audience members asked, where's the math on this? I thought this was about return on investment. And I will tell you, it absolutely is, and we will have that math for you in just a moment. But I think the idea is to understand, how are we getting to the math, right? Where are we going to get to that math so that we can make sure that we actually can do the math correctly? And I think that was actually probably the most important aspect of this. So let's go ahead and move on to the next piece. So if you're thinking about a solution moving from the cloud versus on-prem, and what we mean by this is where we're going to start actually kind of getting in to the math that you may have asked about. We're going to use an example of infrastructure that is on-premise or possibly moving it to the cloud, or if it's software that's on-premise, possibly moving it to the cloud. So. Brian, please, can you move us through the next example, which is understanding or starting with the math?
Sure. The scenario that we chose for our example was a situation where the hardware, the software, could be on-premise or in the office versus the notion of using the cloud to deploy these same applications. This example kind of takes into account that it was for an office of about 25 people, and it's a situation where in this particular case the equipment was aging, it had to be replaced at some point, and then the cost of maintenance was increasing gradually over time. So I won't go through all the numbers exactly, but there's a cost for hardware, software. The software installation, as far as service is concerned, we used $25 units for a number of installations for workstations. So all this equipment that goes into the office has a cost to it, and this cost is typically paid upfront as opposed to over time. The cloud scenario is significantly different, and I think this is where there's a huge advantage for small and medium-sized business. So rather than having to kind of put into the works a lot of expenditures at the outset, that there is an ongoing monthly cost for having the cloud scenario, and that ongoing monthly cost is oftentimes more manageable for a small and medium-sized business. In both of these cases, I've laid out the costs and the potential benefit. So in both cases, we kind of assumed that the financial benefit was about the same at $42,500.
Great. So we have the numbers here, and this is kind of our starting point. And then we're going to kind of move through this and how we're actually going to make this to our final decision. So that's really fantastic. So let's talk about the tools. So what are the tools that you're using, Brian, or that you suggest to use to collect the important data that you need to make these decisions?
Sure. The most commonly used spreadsheet tool is Excel, and I've used Excel for many years. Kind of dating myself, I kind of began with VisiCalc and Lotus 1-2-3, and then graduated to Excel. From an Apple perspective, there's also a tool called Apple Numbers that is kind of innate or native on the platform for Apple. There's also Office 365, which is compatible with the Apple platform, that will allow Apple users to also use Microsoft Excel.
Great, thanks for explaining that. So, one of the things that we propagate is there's a lot of tools out there. And we're not just trying to say, oh, it's just all Microsoft here. There are other things to calculate, gather your data. However, 94% of U.S. small to medium-sized businesses use Microsoft Office, and Excel is the primary thing of use, but that really is the tool, and you could utilize 365 or what Brian mentioned with the Apple Numbers. Everything works together and seamlessly, but really you're basically getting all of your data out of utilizing those specific tools. I think that there's also other software vendors out there that are providing different types of software that you might be able to collect and aggregate all of your data, and that's a possibility. I don't know, Brian, have you ever run into that? There's probably other tools that you probably run into to gather data. Would that be correct?
Sure. Okay. One of the things that comes up in conversation a lot is business intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And we've done some work with some of the clients that we had sort of back in the early days to develop a data warehouse for them. So the data warehouse it actually housed in an MSSQL database to be the storage point. And then we can use Microsoft Excel and some reporting tools, say like Crystal Reports, to go and drag data out of the data warehouse to go and generate reports for management.
Gotcha. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, and it's just easy to aggregate it all when it's in Excel. So that's good. So all right. So let's get into the types of data that you're going to be pulling from these Excel spreadsheets that you might be running or any other type of data. Why don't we kind of get into that?
Sure. From a standpoint of data collection, especially for an ROI calculation, it could be very, very comprehensive. In our situation, we kind of chose some very simplistic numbers to pull for calculation. But from a standpoint of kind of a full scope ROI calculation, you need, in some cases, to get revenue and costs, to also do some calculations to see what the gross margin is like. There's some G&A costs that go into it, and then finally net income. What's also important is time frame. So in our example, I mentioned that we chose 5 years for our time frame, which is about the time frame for hardware and software in terms of longevity. The more difficult part is sometimes the intangible costs that have to go into the calculation. And sometimes those intangible costs can be something like, say goodwill or something like user adoption. So some of those costs are a little bit harder to estimate.
Do you find it that a lot of potential clients that you talk to aren't gathering all these different types of data and then making misinformed decisions?
That's a very good guess. And in some cases, maybe they are going through the motions of gathering the data, but in some cases, the data that they've gathered is incorrect. So they've made some decisions based upon the foundations of some incorrect data.
Wow. Very interesting. Yeah, that intangible cost too, that's difficult to figure out. But I think if you talk to a qualified person like yourself, partner like yourself, they can help you with trying to figure that out, right? And do that. That's great stuff. All right. So now let's get into the metrics. Let's get into some of the nuts and bolts and actually go over the numbers, which we had somebody really excited about. Like, where is this stuff? How are we going to figure it out? So let's get into it now. Brian, take it away. Let's talk about payback time.
Great. So we'll go through some simple examples in terms of how to calculate some metrics. And the first one is payback time, which is probably pretty well known to people. The payback time takes the financial benefits and takes the initial cost, and it takes the division of the two. So if you divide the $45,750 by 12,005, you end up with a payback time of about 3.66 years.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that. Can you elaborate on the financial benefit over time?
Sure. In this particular example, the $45,750 is the initial cost of say the hardware and software in the year one or year zero. The financial benefit over time is the estimate of what the additional gross margin or perhaps the additional cash flow is going to be over the next few years. In this case, we chose a 5-year time horizon only because the hardware and software might typically have a longevity of about that long.
Okay, so you're saying the gross margin is going to increase because of the actual spend, the $47,750 in you're going to increase your gross margin, and that's the financial benefit over time associated with the cost.
Sure, and it could come in two forms.
Okay.
Oftentimes, it's basically a cost savings or cost reduction kind of exercise.
Okay.
In certain cases, especially if, say, CRM comes into play, then there could be an increase in revenue and gross margin.
Okay. Now, on the payback time thing, one thing I notice here is, we're just literally borrowing $47,500, but it doesn't account for any interest. Or does it? Did you have that calculated in here?
No, that is a very good observation. So the payback time that does not take into account that time value of money, and we'll touch on that a little bit later.
Oh, okay, great. Just making sure. All right. So 12,000. So 3.66 years. That's fantastic. Okay, that's a good way of understanding, what that means. All right. So let's get into the return on investment. Or did I? I think we will go back one different slide. Let me go ahead and push play. Sorry. So Brian, when you're looking at return on investment, can you kind of go into how you calculate that?
Sure. So the return on investment is also a very common calculation. And in some situations, you might look at it as the reverse side of the coin in terms of payback. The return on investment typically takes the financial benefit over time, which again could be either an increase in gross margin or a decrease in cost, to determine what the benefit is, and then to take the ratio of the two to kind of figure out what the return on investment is. So in our calculation here, we chose $5,000 for the financial benefit over time over the initial cost of $10,625. And the mathematics come out to 47.1%.
Now, with that 47.1%, I wonder if there's a lot of small to medium-sized business owners out there that are probably asking, like, you know, what is a good return on investment? You know, is it 2%? You know, these numbers are pretty nice and like, okay, these are easy that we can get to. But I'm sure there's a lot of different types of businesses, a lot of different types of investments. Is there a rule of thumb? What is the small to medium-sized business owner, utilizing to come to this conclusion?
That's a really good question. There are some rules of thumb that apply. And maybe from a perspective of just as a business owner, I think there's probably maybe a rule of thumb that says 30% would be a reasonable return.
30%?
30.
30, okay.
There are some other types of things to consider, which might not be quite in this realm. But there have also been discussions that I've been exposed to where an investment of more sizable nature could have a return of 2 times to 5 times the investment. But those are things that are very specific to the industry, very specific to the sales process of the organization. There's another concept that maybe we'll touch on in another discussion. It's called the weighted average cost of capital. And the weighted average cost of capital applies to situations where an owner or an organization is owned partly by the shareholders and conceptually partly by the bank because of a loan commitment. So sometimes organizations will calculate the weighted average cost of capital taking into account the expected returns for shareholders and for debt holders.
Wow. Now that's interesting. Are there anything else that you would include on the ROI calculation in here? You know that you could see as potential pitfalls. Obviously you're an expert, in this field. So, just maybe a little bit more on that.
Sure. I guess from a standpoint of pitfalls, that there is this notion of making sure that you have the right data. So we touched about this earlier about estimation error. So there are some situations where maybe you've made some assumptions based upon some data that was outdated or incorrect. I think there's also some bias that might come into this in a sense that not necessarily related to return on investment, but just decision bias, where occasionally an executive, possibly an owner of an organization, might have a bias one way or another or to one supplier or another. And make a decision that might not necessarily be financially based.
Wow. I wonder if a lot of the business owners out there are utilizing the latest software tools to calculate return on investment. I know that you'd mentioned something about business intelligence, and regardless of who's providing it, I think that's a great way to keep monitoring your return on investment. Have you ever thought about that or implemented something like that with one of your clients to keep a firmer grip on their business?
Absolutely. One of the things that we'll also touch on a little bit later is this notion of comparing the actual results against what you had originally estimated.
Wow.
So in a situation where business intelligence has been deployed,
okay,
there is a mechanism to go and follow certain types of projects to understand the ramifications of what transpired after the decision was made, and then to go back and compare those to the original estimates of ROI.
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for helping us out. All right, so let's go to the what IRR is. I'll let you explain the acronym of IRR.
Sure. The Excel application has a built-in function, as I'm sure others do as well, called the Internal Rate of Return, or IRR. The Internal Rate of Return takes into account a series of cash flows. So I mentioned the cash in and cash out over time. As long as the IRR function has that sort of in and out sort of data to work with, it can come up with a number that is an internal rate of return, somewhat akin to a financial rate of return, and can be used as a proxy for return on investment.
Okay, so now I'm kind of putting this all together. So you're saying that small to medium-sized business can utilize getting the data that you talked about, the results, putting it in Excel, and then calculating your internal ROI and internal rate of return relatively easily?
Sure. The spreadsheet modeling within Excel and others kind of makes that pretty easy.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And I think they can take then that data and then put it into a business intelligence modeler, right? And then be able to use that possibly to forecast 6 months out.
Oh, very good. Yeah. So some of those estimates that we talked about earlier could end up coming into play for predicting the future.
Okay.
And then in some cases be used to sort of make some decisions of yes or no or amongst alternatives based upon that history.
Now, with your internal rate of return calculation, are you able to forecast against that?
I think the internal rate of return calculation might not necessarily be a forecasting tool itself, although it can be. But I think what's important is that the actuals that take place afterwards are tracked fairly carefully. So sometimes I think we've made decisions based upon the numbers that we have some pretty good confidence that it was the right decision. Okay. But sometimes you don't really know that for sure until you actually see the actuals come in against your estimates.
Well, fantastic. It's real neat that Excel actually has that function. I think internal rate of return is we have a little bit more on that. So why don't we go through that those bullet points now?
Sure. The Excel function IRR, it's possible for there to be more than one solution to the IRR calculation. So it requires a guess, essentially. So in the situation that we used here, we used 10% as a guess, thinking that the rate of return was going to be around that number. So from a standpoint of differences between the ROI calculation that we saw earlier, and you mentioned a little bit earlier, in terms of the time value of money. So the internal rate of return calculation does take that into account. It's more of a financial rate of return. I kind of mentioned earlier that it can be used to compare amongst alternatives, and it can be used as a proxy for the ROI calculation.
Can be used as a proxy. Can you elaborate a little bit further on that?
One of the things that we'll show a little bit later is that there is a situation where if you look at more than one aspect or more than one perspective of the situation, sometimes you get a little bit better feeling for how the situation actually is and what might transpire in the future. So from a standpoint of looking at the metrics themselves, both numbers, the ROI calculation and the IRR calculation, have some similar numbers, if you will. So they're in the similar range. So that's why I use the term proxy.
Ah, okay, great. All right, fantastic. All right, so let's move into the next thing, which is really, why don't you help us explain the results that you've been able to come up with all of the different the different things that we talked about here.
Sure. As far as the results are concerned, we'll take a look at the situation where we did the payback time, the return on investment, and the internal rate of return. The time horizon is 5 years, which is about the lifespan of hardware and software. And we did the calculations based upon the two scenarios we discussed earlier, being on-premise and being in the cloud. The calculations, unfortunately, we don't have time to go through all the calculations, but the results are fairly easy to understand. So in the office, payback time is at 3.66 years that we saw earlier. The return on investment, 27.3. The internal rate of return, somewhat lower, at 11.4, and time horizon of 5 years. And similar numbers for if we're in the cloud. Payback time, somewhat shorter, 2.13 years. The return on investment, 47.1%. And the internal rate of return, about 37.5%. The one thing that I wanted to mention that you kind of alluded to earlier is that the internal rate of return has a somewhat lower magnitude, if you will, than the return on investment. So in the situation of in the cloud, return on investment was 47.1, internal rate of return, 37.5. And the reason for that is because the internal return calculation does take into account the time value of money. I once joked with my two sons that if you have a choice, more money is better than less money, and money today better than money tomorrow.
Bird in the hand, better than two in a bush, I guess, right? So if you go back to that example, you're looking at it, and I guess just kind of frame it, we took the example of moving like infrastructure, reinvesting it for the office or doing it in the cloud, right? And moving their infrastructure to the cloud or moving their software to the cloud. And this is a good way of kind of taking a look at, oh, okay, this is the cost. This is what I'm going to get out of it. And this is what, you know, I can possibly save or the return on my investment. And I think you're trying to, you're helping small business understand how to make proper and good decisions, as opposed to just saying, oh, well, I want to own my own stuff, as opposed to I want to rent to own, right? I don't know if you agree with that, but how would you feel about with the statement that I just made?
That's a very good point. In situations that we've come across recently in our existing client base, that there is a pretty strong resistance to move things into the cloud. And I'm not sure exactly why that is just yet, but they are comfortable having things on-premise. Oftentimes it's justified. So in a large organization, for example, they could have a staff of 35 in their IT department. And 35 is a pretty big number, sometimes as large as, you know, the entire corporations for small and medium-sized business. But having that kind of infrastructure, there's an argument possibly for having certain things on-premise. That they may choose a hybrid solution where some things are in the cloud and some things are on-premise, but oftentimes they have the wherewithal, technical expertise, to take care of the things that they need to on-premise. Small organizations in the small and medium-sized space are a little bit different. So some of these things take time and money to put together properly. An Exchange server, for example, for email, if done properly, requires quite a bit of effort and hardware. But to have Office 365 in the cloud, it's a subscription-based model of the upfront expenditure is not there, and it's just a monthly ongoing fee. From a cash flow perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense for small business.
Now, that's a really good thing to think about. I think another thing to consider, now when we're talking about, we're coming from a technology perspective here, so we're not just talking numbers. One thing that you might want to consider, and I'm sure that you talk to your clients about this, is you're looking at a five-year scenario for each one, right? However, the quality of that infrastructure, those pieces, okay, degrade over time. They depreciate, right? As well as performance degrades over time, as opposed to on cloud type of applications. And it's not just Microsoft, although we have some great products. There are other products out there that are in the cloud, but let's talk about the concept of, your machinery breaking down. When you talk and talk with customers, how does that relate within your business, and do you see that a lot?
That's a really good question. The notion of breaking down sort of equates to downtime. And in situations where there are 200 people in the organization that rely upon, say an ERP application to be running, having some downtime for an hour or 2 hours or half a day, that can be pretty expensive. But there's also one more thing that we kind of touched on in some other conversations, which is the disaster recovery. And in situations where the hardware and the software is sort of stashed away in a closet someplace in the back room, maybe the air conditioning is not that great, maybe electricity is not that great, in those situations, that there is more of a risk of a breakdown and perhaps a risk of disaster. So in one situation, we kind of asked one of our prospects that, well, shoot, if there was a fire in this building, and basically all of your equipment and hardware and software was gone, what would you do? His response was, Brian, we'd be dead. So I think your point's well taken about breakdown. Also, there's something that can be considered about disaster recovery.
You know, with the disaster recovery angle, I think 60% of, 40% of all small businesses that are hit by a natural disaster close within 6 months. And a lot of it has to do with they can't get their infrastructure back up and running so that they can provide services to their clients. I think one of the metrics that probably should be factored into your calculations, Brian, is really a disaster recovery provision. What happens if I keep everything on premise and I'm gone, I'm down for 4 days, 5 days, 10 days, what does that cost? And should I factor that in to my overall calculation? What do you think about that?
That's a very good point. And for simplicity, we kind of omitted that in our calculations. But you're absolutely right. especially there's another type of thing that is sort of onerous, which is security of the data. So in some situations, some of the folks we talk to have some non-public information that they have to protect. And it's maybe in one of the more extreme cases, social security numbers, dates of birth, names and addresses, along with credit card data, kind of all stashed in one place. That's a situation where there's a real need for some forethought and some real need for security. Even though the insurance may cover, say, the theft of the equipment, possibly, but not all insurance is going to cover the implications of having lost that non-public information to identity theft.
Yeah. And I think it really comes down to the lease versus buy concept. You know, people are looking at cars, and you just know if you lease it, they maintain the car. You bring it in for servicing, they're taking care of it. They're making sure that it's running all the time perfectly, and that's encompassed in your monthly payment. As opposed, if you bought it, you know, you own it, right? And you got to pay for the repairs. You have to pay for all these things. I think the position that seems to be optimal for small to medium-sized business in a technology environment and trying to calculate return on investment, really, I think, is based around hybrid infrastructure, because putting everything in the cloud, would be very bold and very brave, right? There's just some things right now in today's technology that for some reason just need to be on premise, and it's good to have that. It's good to have disaster recovery. Good to have some of these options together. So if you've seen this, you've seen the in the office or in the cloud, it applies to a lot of different things. I mean, you could just be doing regular software. You could be doing infrastructure as a service. You could do, if you have a platform as a service where you actually have, a manufacturing firm that, allows for ordering online, you could put that to the cloud instead of hosting it, right, on your on-premise. So those are the things. So, all right, so let's move into things to be mindful for, why don't Brian, you go over these first, and we'll talk about them.
Sure. There are some things to be mindful of, and the ROI calculation, IIR, payback time, those things are all fairly straightforward to calculate. So some of the things that are a little bit softer or a little bit trickier, if you will. So we kind of mentioned estimation error, and to maybe not so much from historical data, although errors could be found in the historical data, but maybe more into projecting the future. There are situations where sometimes as we forecast sales, we tend to be somewhat optimistic about the future years, when in fact reality might be somewhat different. There's also the situation where in an implementation project, for example, there are going to be some cost overruns. And sometimes the way to compensate for that is to be a little bit conservative in terms of what the cost estimates are going to be, and maybe to bump them up a little bit, trying to account for that estimation error and the cost overrun. There are some intangible things that we talked about before. The intangible things could include, say goodwill on the part of the customer, where some of the customer service type functions are improved because of some deployment of an ERP application, for example. There are also some things that are intangible that are kind of hard to estimate in terms of adoption, where something is deployed within the organization, and there's some number of personnel that might not adopt as quickly as others. What's a little bit more tricky than the intangibles is opportunity cost. So we talked about this notion of not making a decision. So sometimes there is an opportunity cost for not making decisions, and sometimes an opportunity cost for making decisions because it prevents you from taking another path.
Great. Well, we have a good question in here that came up, and it says, what size major disaster may affect cloud? Location of cloud can be damaged, still located in a business building. And Brian, I'll let you take a stab at that, unless you want me to go, I'll add to that one.
Sure. If I understand the question correctly, the question might be about the cloud scenario and what might happen to a cloud provider. So in situations like that, many cloud providers have already thought ahead to some extent. And within a particular facility, there is redundancy. So if a server went out or a hard drive went out, that there are other pieces of equipment that will immediately fall into place and take up the load. There are also situations where there is geographic redundancy. So in one of our partners' case, there is a facility in San Diego and essentially a mirror facility in Houston, Texas. So in those situations where if something bad were to happen in one location or the other, the other location would pick up.
Yeah, so when you're looking at cloud, and this is the way to think about it, is there's a lot of different cloud providers out there. So we've got a lot of different like Dropbox, right? You know, the OneDrive. We have our own, you know, that talks about that, Intuit, who does the QuickBooks and the Dynamics 365. There's a lot of different cloud providers out there. And really to this specific question, it really comes down to where do they house their data? Because the cloud really is just the data center that we are actually managing, the cloud providers are actually managing and keeping open and having proper security, you know, concepts for it. So it really comes down to how many data centers do they have, and are they all geo-redundant, meaning that they have different areas throughout the country or the world that do that. So for, you know, a major cloud, a major company, you know, for example, like Microsoft, for our cloud infrastructure to go down, you would have to wipe out 19 data centers around the world. I think over 120 actual data center facilities, and then that would be the biggest effect. Then whammo, you know, then it's all down. That you'd have to get every one of them is down, because what we do is we replicate. We you know, take the information and we're sending it back and forth, to different data centers just in case that there is a geo problem, you know, with disaster recovery. You know, other providers out there, you know, they have one or two data centers. Okay, well, if both data centers are within the same, you know, Southern California, well, then you do have there's a possibility. However, data centers, which is the cloud per se, typically, and people don't know this, they have, you know, at least 48 hours of backup for battery. Okay, so they have literally a room full of car battery type of batteries full there. But they also typically have, you know, 5 days of fuel that sits on the top of the roof with a generator, and the generator is sitting there, you know, and it goes. And I think the thought or the idea is, if, you know, there are 7 days that data center can't be back up, you know, with any type of fuel, there's probably a bigger problem going around in the world. You know, one of the things that that we do and that we have on top of that, a lot of other data centers do this as well, is, you know, we have contracts with a lot of the major oil companies. And people don't realize this, but there's a truck that's going around and around the data centers, and they have fuel. It's contracted for the data center. That's their fuel, and it goes around 24 hours a day just in case there is something that happens, so they can go in there and keep things going on. But it'd have to be really tough. And if you compare that with your office, or an office, or a person's office, you have to ask yourself the question, what is really security, right? Is it in a closet? You know, is it in a facility that has, you know, fire suppression and all that kind of stuff? Probably not. And so there's a real high and much different security level here. So why don't we go ahead and get, you know, wrapping this up, you know, in summation, if we just go ahead and get to the summation slide, we'll go ahead and kind of just get into that one. So we talked about things being mindful, and then the summary. We've got about four minutes left, actually. And Brian, why don't you just go ahead and run through this?
Sure. In summary, the process for the ROI calculations is to provide some mechanism for some data-driven decision making. And oftentimes, I mentioned earlier that we make decisions based on gut, and sometimes we need to look at that data. Oftentimes, a comparison of alternatives is better than making a yes-no decision on one option. The data collection process is important for both the tangible and the intangible types of elements. We talked about payback time, the return on investment, and the internal rate of return as metrics. The key might be, as Sherman mentioned, after the project has been selected and is in progress, is to go back and look at the actuals and compare them to the estimates, just so that when it comes down to doing it in the future, you have some sense for how to make some better calculations and some better decisions going forward. And the objective overall for small and medium-sized business is to make the best use of time and the money. Oftentimes, we have to ask ourselves, if we make this investment, what is the return on investment?
Thank you, Brian. You know, to reach Brian, we'll put up the slide here that talks about his phone number, his email. We think the world of Brian, and you know, we suggest that if you're interested in talking about, you know, your business and how to possibly find ways to reduce costs, or you know, find ways to plan better. Really, Brian is your person. And Brian, I'll get last few words about your company and why to give you a call.
All right, thanks, Chairman. The organization has been around for a long time. So I mentioned to Sherman earlier that a corporation was formed in 95, partner I began working in 91. We've been doing this quite a while. There was a situation where we have been able to solve some very difficult problems for manufacturing companies and others. And I think that happy to have that opportunity to work with some of these customers, because we learned quite a lot in the process.
Great, thank you. Well, I'm Sherman Krantzer, and I'm the Senior Partner Channel Development Manager, and I'm just delighted. I thought today's show was fantastic. Thank you very much, Brian. You know, thank you to the SBA in Santa Ana, Christopher Lorenzana, Adalberto Quijada, Cherie Coates, and the MTC folks here that are helping us produce these programs. We're doing this for small to medium-sized business to help them. We hope that the show really helped you understand calculating return on investment, but also have an understanding of how that probably applies in a technology an area, and be able to frame whether you should move from on-premise type of software to in the cloud. We're here to help. You can always provide reach out to me, and we can provide you a copy of the presentation. We can also provide you a copy of the actual PowerPoint. We'll provide that to the folks over at the Small Business Administration. But just to say once again, thank you so much for attending today, and we really, really appreciate it. And next month, we're going to be talking about SharePoint, but we're going to talk about business processes and how to actually create them to increase your efficiency, how to increase your overall return on investment into your company. So it'll be it's a great presentation. Michelle Hollis will be coming from Sixth Street Consulting, a wonderful group out there that we highly respect. Thanks everyone for coming. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next month, first Tuesday of the month. Thanks again. Have a good day.